Take it away.
Okay. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be here. When I originally submitted a proposal for this panel, I was planning to present work that has been already in circulation dealing with the relationship between inequality at the global level and financialization. I did not expect that the research project that we've been engaged in would show the progress that it has since shown. And so I have an opportunity today to do something else, something that's a little bit more basic but also substantially more new, and that is to present new estimates of economic inequality measured in countries around the world up through about 2008. And this is work which is joint work with two collaborators in the University of Texas Inequality Project, students Beatrice Halbach and Amin Shams. Let me just say, it's also work, I should say, that's been supported by a grant from the Institute for New Economic Thinking. The purpose of the University of Texas Inequality Project was to attempt to develop systematic and comparable measures of inequality for a wide range of countries around the world using data sets that had not previously been deployed for this purpose. Now, a great many national and regional data sets are adaptable to this task. The one that on which this work is based is the industrial statistics of the United Nations Industrial Development Organization. The method of the group has been completely standard throughout its entire existence and consists of applying a measure, a statistical technique that I first learned from my LBJ school colleague Robert Wilson, namely the between groups component of Tiles t-statistic, something which permits us to use semi-aggregated data sets organized in category structures, as a way of presenting measures of inequality. Question might be, why is this needed? Is this simply an additional fifth wheel on a large project of measuring inequality conducted by other people? And the answer to that is that when one, especially in the middle 1990s when we got underway, when one looked at the what was available as compilations of measures of economic inequality at the world scale, the very remarkable and thorough work done by Deininger and Squire at the World Bank, as a base for a large-scale research effort, it was very problematic. And the problems included the fact that there were many gaps in the data, and also the fact that the data points were often conceptually incommensurable with each other. That is to say, in some cases you were talking about income inequality, in some cases expenditure inequality, in some cases households, in some cases persons, in some cases gross of taxes, in some cases net. The result being that it took an enormous amount of work to try and get a systematic picture of what was going on in the world economy, and even when you did that, you were still subject to the problem of enormous gaps in the data set. The industrial statistics had the virtue of being available for a large number of countries on a consistent basis, so with about 3,400 country year observations from initially 63 to 1999. The trade-off or the disadvantage is that rather than being the measure that most people are interested in for most purposes, namely household income inequality, this was a measure of inequalities in structures of industrial pay. However, it was possible to make an assessment of the relationship between different types of measures, which we did around 2005, and that showed that there was, in fact, a stable relationship between our inequality measures and the various measures in the Deininger and Squire data set. And that permitted us to use a statistical technique, basically a regression technique, to create a parallel data set, estimated household income inequality, which translated these industrial pay tile statistics into a Gini coefficient standardized around the concept of gross household income inequality, by which we mean what Deininger and Squire meant, namely income of households not adjusted for household size by and large, and not including a net, not a gross of taxes, rather. So that's where we were a few years ago with a data set that extended to 1999 with minor extensions into the 2000s. The problem became, could we bring this up to date, and in particular, bring it up closer to the years of the world financial crisis? This is problematic for a number of reasons. The underlying data set is not maintained in a consistent way for this purpose, and bringing it into shape, putting it in shape to make these calculations was a very big challenge that Amin Shams has been working on for several years now. Just to give you some ideas of the kinds of things that come up when you do this, you can see the light blue is the new data. The green is the original data, and the dark lines align with the dots in it is the data set that we finally used. This is an example for Belgium where something clearly anomalous happens for a period of time in the new data, not in the old data. And you obviously have to throw out the anomalies and create something which is our best judgment of what is likely to have actually happened. Less problematic, but still something one has to worry about in particular situations where this is data. These are estimates calculated across industrial categories, and in some cases you'll have a missing industry or some other anomaly for a particular sector in a particular year, and it's necessary to look for the erratic performance, since the tile statistics are very sensitive to these small variations, and to interpolate in some cases, fill in missing years and sectors. And that you can see for the case of Bolivia, it doesn't make a huge difference, but it does require one to be very careful and meticulous as you go forward. However, there are results that where the old and the new data are consistent, and one gets a nice extension from the new information going up to the middle 2000s. This is Canada, and cases where we had very important cases, for example, Brazil, where we had, in the original data set, not a very wide range of years, but the new data permitted us to extend it right up through to the present, and capturing a phenomenon that has already been documented from national sources, namely the stabilization and decline, ultimately, of the very high levels of inequality that are known to be characteristic of Brazil. In some cases, China, you don't get a complete extension. That is to say, there are large gaps in the data for reasons that have to do probably with the reporting relationships between the PRC and the United Nations. On the other hand, in these cases, one can cross-check often, particularly for a significant country like China with very good internal data sources, this picture with information calculated from national data sources is a calculation made by another student, Wenjie Zhang, of inequality between and within provinces in China. And as you can see, it shows the same pattern with a peak and a decline as the as the data supplied to UNIDO. So it's likely that we're using the same data sources, but that China simply didn't report for a period of years. If one looks over the global trend, a pattern from this data, you get an average value, which is all I've done so far with these very new measures, over 4,054 data points for 167 countries, 1963 to 2008, with essentially the same global sweep that we had observed in the earlier iteration of this exercise. That is to say, a period of relative stability up to the end of the Bretton Woods system, around 1971, a period of declining inequality on average as developing countries grew quite rapidly and compressed their pay structures. A long sweep of rising inequality goes up to 2001, which is the peak, and then some decline in the decade of the 2000s. I suspect, I haven't worked this out, that this is epiphenomenal, having to do with the entry into the data of low inequality countries from the transition of the collapse of the Soviet Union. But as I say, this is just a calculation that I did very quickly in order to bring you a summary for this this conference. Second thing that we did was to extend the EHI, the inequality, income inequality estimates using the new UTIP-UNINO data set. This is just the regression that was used to standardize our estimates against the original Dininger and Squire data set, 430 overlapping observations in the original data period. The coefficients are essentially the same as they were in the initial calculations. Model is exactly the same. So it's not surprising that the estimates for the past years are very similar to the ones that we originally published. And this is just a handful of countries that I just pulled out to show you that that is in fact the case, that you have basically new estimates that track the old estimates very well and extend them in a number of, extend them in most cases by, let's say, up to 10 years. So that's where we are with the EHI measures. And what I wanted to do, how much time do I have?
You have 5 more minutes.
Okay, excellent. What I want to do now is to show you just a little bit about how these measures, which are income inequality Gini coefficients, compare for a number of countries with the full, practically the full literature of measured income inequality for those countries. Now, there are only a small number of countries for which there is a very large literature of income inequality measures, and what Beatrice Halbeck has been doing has been to collecting those articles and copying out the coefficients and identifying them according to the type of concept that is involved in the measurement. And it's really quite astonishing what she found. It's something that really struck me as being quite extraordinary. It's a range of inequality measures that are available and that are reported in the literature for very well-known countries. This is Canada. And what you have in the green are, let's say, market-based measures. That is to say, inequality of market incomes. What you have in the blue is household incomes, including the Dininger and Squire measures. And what you have in the red are after-tax and disposable incomes. So it's not surprising the disposable income measures lie below the market-based measures with the others in the middle. The black is our estimate. And so you can see here that our estimate lies roughly in line with other estimates of household income, including non-market incomes, well above the disposables, well below the market-based measures. But it's truly extraordinary that the scope of the range of estimates here for a country like Canada, which is on the order of, let's say, 20 Gini points, from 27 up to 51, in terms of which, depending on which concept you happen to be interested in, and that range is much larger than the variation across time. So it really does matter what concept you are interested in. It matters a lot. And we can go through and do the same exercise for even a small country like Denmark, just a few million people, 6 million people. And again, our measures are consistently above, well, not entirely above the disposable, but above most of the disposable income measures and below the market-based measures.
Which is yours?
Ours is black. Ours is the black line, the thick black line. So what we're doing is saying we have an estimate which is based on a single consistent principle and just trying to see where it lies within the range of the literature available for any given country. And again, you can see that the range of measures depending upon what concept you're deploying is really quite enormous. This is France, which is a country with generally very, very weak measurement of inequality actually in the literature. And you can see the market-based measures have some clear anomalies in them that cannot be reflecting real developments. You don't have 20 or 15 point shifts in Gini coefficients over short periods of time that are not picked up in any other evidence. But so that you can pick up from this things that are likely to be quite problematic and things which are at least somewhat validated by being comparable to other measures. This is Germany. Again, you can see a big anomaly in the market-based measures. Our measures are once again quite stable and quite within this range of lying close to other measures of gross household income inequality, well below pure market incomes, well above the final measure of disposable after-tax income inequality. This is Japan. Same story, maybe a little bit different. And this is, I will be done it. This is the UK, where you have a lot of studies and a lot of measures. But once again, I think what you're seeing here is that ours are reasonably consistent with the concept that they're supposed to represent. And once again, a very large range according to whether you are dealing with market or after-tax income. And this is finally the United States. And I'll just close with an observation about the U.S. Our measures for the U.S., I think, are not necessarily the ideal measures. I wouldn't put them forward for that purpose, since we have a very data-rich environment in the U.S. and a lot of fairly reliable studies. Nevertheless, they're consistent with the performance of our estimated measures in most other countries, but with one significant exception, which is that you can see that measures of market income and household income in the U.S. have a pattern here which you can clearly associate with the rise and fall of the stock market. And that is to say with the income streams from capital asset valuations reflected in stock option realizations and capital gains. And that's not going to show up in our measure, which is basically an earnings-based measure. All right? It's an extrapolation based upon earnings, which does suggest to me a couple of things about the U.S. case. One is that our income inequality is primarily driven by the variations in income accruing to the very, very top of the scale, let us say, a small number of people with very, very high incomes, not due to anything that's fundamentally going on in the labor market. And here, I guess, there are some implications for the great divergence argument, because it does seem to me that what you're looking at here is something that you don't pick up if you're focused on earned incomes. And the second thing is that it may be that in part the very high income inequality measures that are associated by many people with the United States have to do, well, first of all, with the scale of the country, but also with the ability of the tax authorities to pick up capital incomes. Because if you have a country which doesn't do that very well, or where the capital incomes are being hidden in offshore tax havens, then the measures that you will see for the United States may be present, but not visible in the data. So it may be that part of our experience of being a very high income inequality country has to do with the fact that we have particularly good statistical services. So, conclusions, again, range of inequality measures is very, very large. Anybody working with this stuff needs to be very sensitive to what the concept is that you're working with. Secondly, our measures, the EHI measures, are reasonably consistent in lying below the market measures, above measures for disposable income. Thirdly, the point I just made about the United States. And finally, the data sets are there. They are online, 4,000 data points on pay, 3,800 on these estimated income inequality measures. So anybody who's interested in this material, they're welcome to download and use them. Thank you very much.
We'll now hear from Branko Milanovic, who is the lead economist at the World Bank Research Department and the author.